This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good morning, Rutherford County. We have Mr. John Duke back on again today by popular demand, and had so many calls on him. And we only got just into a little bit of our program last time. An hour is not even close to what we wanted to talk about. And we want to let you know that the first part of his show is brought to you by Gordon and Ralston. And when you're ready for something special, call Gordon and Ralston Photography. They are now accepting appointments for high school seniors and family outdoor photography. It is absolutely a gorgeous time. The leaves will be turning pretty in the fall, and in a few weeks, that is a beautiful time of the year to capture the love of your family. Hang love on your wall year-round with a designer portrait from Gordon and Ralston Photography at 315 Hickerson Drive, right here in Murfreesboro. You can reach them at 615-396-8776. Call now and reserve your appointment. That's 615-396-8776. And Al Gordon, a master craftsman, and Larry Ralston, a certified craftsman, and cost everybody around here should know them by now. They are at Gordon Ralston Photography, and it's creative and current with today's styles. Call 615-396-8776 today and reserve your appointment. A full-service studio to meet all your needs in photography, Gordon and Ralston Photography. Again, that's 396-8776. Also on the internet, www.gordonralstonphoto.com. Portraits make a great holiday gift. Gordon and Ralston Photography, 396-8776. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
It is so good to see you. And when you were on last, you brought a lot of great memories to me and a lot of the folks out there, because I had a lot of calls after the show. And one of the things, you loaned me a book. And it's called The Other Music City.
Mm-hmm.
And right. It really was an interesting look back into old Nashville, the Middle Tennessee area, and the national musical industry, and how Nashville played such an important part in what went on, how it grew over the years from the early 1900s to actually to where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that was written by two friends of mine, P.J. Broom and Clay Tucker. Mm-hmm. P.J. called me, said he was trying to put a book together, and asked me if I'd be interested in working with him on it, and I suggested Clay Tucker at MTSU. Mm-hmm. Clay was a former naval officer and came back from the Navy and went to Vanderbilt and got his degree, became dean of liberal arts at MTSU, and he was a trumpet player. So they collaborated on that, and I've enjoyed the book very much.
Yeah, we think of Nashville as the country music capital of the world, which it really is. But back in those days, with all the unbelievable talent that we had around here, it was almost comparable to New York and some of the other areas that the entertainment they provided. And it was all over Nashville. You had the hotels involved in it. You had the special clubs that were involved. And the talent would equal anything that you heard in the major cities.
Well, that's true. And the title of that book, The Other Music City, pertains to that subject, that Nashville wasn't as well known for its jazz and dance bands and things like that were going on, because it became mostly known for country music. So the book is about the other Nashville in addition to the country music.
Of course, those of us that grew up in that time, we remember a lot of the places that were in Nashville. You and I were talking about earlier the old Plantation Club,
right.
And
played
of course
there.
Printer's mm-hmm. Alley. Oh, you played at the Plantation Club.
Sure, yeah, I played at the Plantation Club. Steady job, huh?
That was a big time place back then.
It was beautiful place. Ben Pryor's band had booked a long engagement at the Plantation Club, but there were a lot of bands in Nashville. Tommy Knowles had a band, Carl Garvin, Wally Hopper, of course, Orrin Bradley, Ben Pryor, Red McEwen.
I remember most of those names, and I think most people my age do.
Well, that was the source of work in those days was big band, and Nashville had a pool of players mm-hmm. that one night might be a player might be playing one night with one band, and the next week he's playing with somebody else. So there was a lot of work because there were so many bands that needed players.
Was that difficult? I know you did that. Was that difficult swapping from one band to the other and being able to stay in sync with them?
No, and one thing I wanted to mention, that pool of players, you have to be an excellent sight reader so that you can come in and read the book. They might mm-hmm. have a number of arrangements there, 100 or 200 or 300 arrangements, mm-hmm. but there was a whole group of musicians in Nashville that could do that. And even some of the big bands that I mentioned last week that I played with, like mm-hmm. Les Elgart and Glenn Miller and Guy Lombardo, mm-hmm. they would come to Nashville, but they didn't bring their band. They brought their arrangements.
That's amazing. You think the Guy Lombardo band and Benny Goodman band, all that, it was all the same guys. But they were actually, I guess it was a whole lot less expensive.
Well, yeah, that happened after World War II. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the bands were one group, and mm-hmm. they still travel that way. But the expenses got to be so enormous for a traveling band that they just could not afford to pay the expenses. So, for example, Les Elgart might start out from New York and be booked from New York mm-hmm. and pick up a couple of players on the way down here. But most of his band will be composed of Nashville musicians.
Hmm.
We did the same thing with Elvis. We had the Johnny Cash Orchestra going at that same time, which was actually called the Bill Walker Orchestra.
And you played in that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a two-year engagement on the network. And every night Johnny Cash would say, "Good night, Bill Walker." I don't know whether you remember that or not.
But no.
Yeah, Bill Walker was the leader, and he would salute the band and wave to the band. But when Elvis needed a band to accompany him down in Tuscaloosa, they hired a bus and took basically the Johnny Cash Orchestra down to Tuscaloosa to play for Elvis. Put us up in a hotel. We even got to take our wives, and we've got some stories about that.
You've had a great life, big boy.
Well,
you really have.
I've been very lucky. As I mentioned last week, God put me in the right place at the right time, and I've always been very thankful.
Now, you were part of a union. I think
absolutely.
The musicians almost had to be part of a union.
Right,
back then.
Yeah. Yeah, coming out of high school, last week we talked about a lot of the high school groups that I played in, mm-hmm. and that was kind of a training ground. When I was 18, I joined the union, mm-hmm. and been in the union now ever since, which is 62 years, I think.
That's kind of like ASCAP, but it's...
Exactly. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, ASCAP is a performance rights organization. Uh-huh. But, yeah, I'm a very strong union man.
Well, it was a great way to connect everybody, because if you're a big-name band leader, you want to put your best product out every time you go
out.
That's
right. That's right.
So that's how they were able to accept, because you didn't get into that union unless you could perform.
That's right. You had to by invitation or by audition. Yeah. And I considered it a great honor to join the American Federation of Musicians when I was 18. Felt very lucky to be able to do that.
That's amazing. Now, when radio was in, music was king. I mean, it really was. Mm-hmm. Whether it's country music, jazz, big band, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How was it during that particular time when I mean, you knew that you were putting out the best product to the people all over the world at that time through the airways. That must have been something special.
Well, it's kind of like being on your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, by the way, I've gotten great. You said you got response. I've gotten response from Brazil, Japan, and people really like that podcast that you allowed me to send out.
That's because you're so interesting.
Well, I don't know about that, but I lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
We're basically talking about how was it during the radio era.
Oh, yeah.
when music was king.
Yeah.
And I never have understood when people would go somewhere for entertainment in the 40s and the 50s, mm-hmm. They would go a lot of times to the type of music that you were playing, and you're bringing in all the... I was looking through some of the people that were here during that time.
Uh-huh.
Dinah Shore.
She's from Winchester.
Right. And I was looking at her picture. She was so young, and mm-hmm. what a beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. You had Snooki Lansom here, mm-hmm. and then you mm-hmm. had Phil Harris mm-hmm. here. Bing Crosby came mm-hmm. through. Mm-hmm. And all of these local names. Of course, everybody knew Teddy Bart in the 50s mm-hmm. when he was on WSM. But when you see a lot of it starting to really rise when WSM became a radio mm-hmm. station, and then I think right after that, WLAC became a radio station,
yeah.
It was pure entertainment for the folks around here.
It was, and I practically learned to play the clarinet by listening to WLAC. They had
a
program in the afternoon, and Manny Davis was the clarinetist on that show, and he played "A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody." That was their theme song,
yeah.
So I just... Every time it came on, I would sit there and copy that, try to play along with him. But I was lucky too. My father would take me to see Sunday Down South, where all those mm-hmm. studio musicians were playing at WSM,
mm-hmm.
and these guys were like my idols, you know. And so I got to see that. And my sister took me to live concerts, like Erskine Hawkins, the 20th mm-hmm. Century Gabriel, Louis mm-hmm. Jordan, got to see Stan Kenton, Dizzy Gillespie, all the great things that were coming into Nashville. My family supported me and took me to those.
Yeah. And then you had, I was marveling at the connections all the way through there. And at Fisk,
mm-hmm.
Louis Armstrong's wife went to Fisk University.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in there, he pretty much gives a biography
mm-hmm.
of you in about one full page
mm-hmm.
of some of the things that mm-hmm. you did for music. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the bands you played with one time was Louis Armstrong's band.
Well, what happened there is I played on some of his recordings.
Okay.
He wasn't there at that time.
I did get
to meet him. He was on the Johnny Cash show.
Ah.
And we got to meet him and hang out in the alley back there and talk to him and everything, which was great. So many people were on that show. It was incredible. But, I got to meet the man. He's the number one jazz man forever. And, you know, his solos still sound like they were recorded yesterday.
Unbelievable.
It's like T.S. Eliot said, "A thing of beauty is a joy forever." Louis Armstrong solos.
Louis Armstrong has got the best voice for the way he sings. And some of the songs just reach out and really grab you.
Yeah.
And I've always heard he's one of the nicest fellas that you'll ever meet.
Well, he was great. We had a good time.
One of my favorite movies, I shouldn't say this, was Hello, Dolly. And when he gets up there and sings and when he acts, he just captures the whole scene when he's in it, even when he's with Barbara Streisand. It's amazing.
He became very big in the movies, you know.
Now, you told me that you talked to a number of your family and friends after the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What did they think about your first performance right here in Murfreesboro?
Well, I think they were kind of proud of it.
Oh, I think they should be proud of it.
My son out in California is probably He's probably the toughest critic because this is his business.
Now, he does some voiceovers.
He does.
On some of the TV programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the narrator on Swamp People on the History Channel and Yukon Men on the Discovery Channel and another new one, Texas Car Wars.
I've been trying to find Texas Car Wash, and I haven't found it yet, but I'm going to find it.
It's a trip. It's funny. And he adopts a very deep Southern accent on it. So Pat is a kind of a chameleon. He can sound like he's from New York or like
he changes his voice for each one of them.
Yeah, well, according to what they want,
you know,
what the people want on the show.
Good voice people are really in demand, aren't they? Because they capture what's going on with whatever particular event that you're watching. And I noticed that the guy that developed the NFL films just died recently, Mr. Sabo. And all the voiceovers that were done for each one of those events that were happening, they were feminine NFL, actually made the shows. They really did. And I'm sure your son does that. And I am going to, that's the one I'm aiming for. The Swamp People I've seen, but I want to see the other one.
Well, we talked about Pat some last week, but my daughter said, Dad, you talked about everybody, but you didn't mention you didn't mention me. And I wanted to get a plug in for this function that she's the head of.
Okay.
If we could do that.
Yes, sir.
My daughter is Renee Miller. She's married to Eddie Miller.
And everybody knows Eddie.
They're having a function called Starry Starry Night, which is a fundraiser for St. Rose School. And that's on October the 13th at MTSU. And anyone interested, it's a night in honor of the grandparents from St. Rose. And it's a wonderful evening, and if they're interested in coming to that, they can call 896-3934, which is my daughter Renee. And I better plug my other son too while I'm there. My son John.
Get the whole family in, John.
My oldest son John just became a grandfather. He's a retired art teacher in Nashville.
Wait a minute, Nath. Say that again. Your oldest son, John, has become a grandfather?
Right.
Are you a great-grandfather?
That's right.
Oh, man, you don't look it.
Yeah, well.
You got to start young.
Yeah, that's right. But John graduated from MTSU and set up the art program at Tennessee Preparatory School.
Oh, okay.
I don't know whether you're familiar with that or not. But that was a school for students who did not have a home that was compatible for bringing them up. And the he set up the facilities there, got to design his own art building, and so he did that. And then they closed that and changed it to the Nashville Arts Academy. And John taught for a few years in Metro after that, but he's retired now too. So that makes me a little old too, that my son's a retired teacher.
You know, I can tell you're a proud dad.
I am. Very much so.
There's nothing like your kids. Now, you had another family, and, of course, that's the musical family.
Right.
And I could tell that you guys had a lot of fun back then.
Absolutely.
And you have been to so many interesting places. We talked about Phenix City, Alabama, which I saw more on television probably than what you saw there because you were playing there at nights. And how was it to play in Phenix City? We talked about that a little bit but we didn't go in depth with it too much because we talked more about the city and we talked about more than you playing there.
Well, I first got hired in Phenix City to play at a club called Soho Club. And we played there like in June of 52. We played there for, I guess, 6 weeks. And then we moved over to a place called Chad's, which was a little bit better club. And I played there until I decided to come back to school at Peabody and Vanderbilt. But it was great. I think we talked a little bit about that. Bands would be coming in to play at Fort Benning, and the musicians would come out to our club and sit in with us for jam sessions afterwards. And groups like Charlie Barnett, he was a famous band leader, and he's mentioned in this book too. I didn't realize that he had played in Nashville till I reread that book.
I think everybody started in Nashville, it looks like.
Absolutely. But it was just fabulous. We, I mentioned last week the we had a different act to back up each week, and had our exotic dancers that we played behind.
And that didn't distract you at all. You still stayed on the same note all the way through.
Well, it was an opportunity to play some very sexy alto saxophone solos.
Well, when you're used to dodging all those bottles coming at you behind the screen at Phoenix City.
Yeah, well, no, we didn't. The only thing I had to dodge was one of them threw a shoe one night, and it ended up in the bell of my tenor saxophone. I didn't care for that too much. But now, they had dancers like that in Nashville. Now, I think one of the first dancers like that I played for was in Nashville, and then afterwards, too.
Yeah, the Plantation Club was famous for that.
The Plantation had the best act like that I've ever seen.
We'll catch that when we get right back.
Okay.
And we're going to have to break and let you know that part of this show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. And when you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From a simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off broad between Chewy's and Chili's on the Ridgely Road.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thoburn. A Loudoun County jury has acquitted a retirement village resident in the killing of a neighbor. The not guilty verdict was returned late yesterday afternoon in the second-degree murder trial of 71-year-old Norman Witten. Witten was charged in the April 2010 shooting death of 74-year-old Larry Butcher in Tellico Village, where both men lived. Witten told sheriff's investigators that he honked his horn at Butcher, who was driving a golf cart, and that Butcher got off the golf cart, reached through Witten's open car window, and was choking him. Witten then shot Butcher once in the chest with a .38 caliber pistol. Tennessee is putting on the pounds.
A new report from Trust for America's Health ranks Tennessee as the fourth most obese state in the nation. 29% of its citizens here considered as such. The report projects 63% of Tennesseans will be obese by the year 2030.
TRN's Dan Idem. The Tennessee Bar Association is holding a hearing today in Nashville on possible improvements to the state law that allows courts to appoint guardians to handle the affairs of some vulnerable adults. The law is meant to protect adults with diminished capacity due to age, disability, mental health issues, or addiction, but sometimes the system does not work as intended.
Hi, I'm Wade Hayes, owner of Toots, Good Food and Fun. I strongly believe that volunteers make a positive difference in the quality of life here in our community.
Catherine McCroskey is our Toots Outstanding Volunteer. She loves her neighborhood and never gives up on projects that help the Shiloh community. It took her years, but she led the fight to expand Halls Hill Pike in front of the Daniel McKee School after more than a dozen pedestrians were killed by speeding motorists. Now she's working on a community center there. Catherine McCroskey, a volunteer who never takes no for an answer.
At Toots, we strongly believe that it's important for every one of our citizens to give some of their time and talent back into the community. We've been so blessed here in Rutherford County, and we want to honor these individuals with a Toots gift certificate good at any of our three Rutherford County locations. Our original Toots on Northwest Broad Street, Sam Ridley Parkway in Smyrna, and our newest location at South Church Street and Barfield Road.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We get camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced almost $12 million in additional drought aid. The funding through the National Resources Conservation Service goes to states that were hit with exceptional or extreme drought conditions, including Tennessee. It will help livestock producers apply conservation practices that will improve soil health and productivity. I'm Kristen Thoburn, Tennessee Radio Network News.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. So sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
Now I'm getting clicks on my website.
My business is coming up first in search engine results.
Use the internet to make your business succeed. Find out how. Attend a free online marketing seminar with Yellowbook 360. Register at ybseminars.com.
I trust Yellowbook 360 with all my marketing needs.
This seminar is worth every minute.
Don't miss out. Attend a free online marketing seminar at ybseminars.com. That's ybseminars.com.
WeatherEye.
A check of the forecast now with staff meteorologist Mandy Valuber. Right now, 59 degrees, sunny skies. Hey, Mandy.
For the forecast area today, Brian, we will see sunshine with a high near 80 degrees. We'll have a south-southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Clear skies this evening, 54 degrees for your low. Friday, beautiful sunshine, 83 for a high with a wind out of the south-southwest. Just partly cloudy skies Friday night and a low of 59. Saturday, a spotty shower chance, otherwise sunshine. 76 degrees for your high temperature. I'm meteorologist Mandy Valuber.
Mandy, thank you so much. Again, sunshine and 59. Our good neighbor of the day today, Jade Humphreys, receiving a bouquet of flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts on Academy. And our birthday cake winner, Miss Mary Wade. Happy birthday to you, Mary. She receives a birthday cake from Junior's Foodland.
That update brought to you by Progressive Insurance, helping you save when you need it the most. Now that's Progressive. Get a quote today at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. The freedom to name your own price. That is Progressive.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And welcome back with our entertainer, John Duke. And one of the people who pioneered music, actually, and pretty much you can almost cover all genres. But you have you were at the university for a pretty good while, John, and they really have some special departments in music there.
25 years I taught there.
Wow,
and enjoyed it very much. It's a great school. All three of my children graduated from there, and I'm very proud of that. I came to MTSU in 1970. Mm-hmm. Neil Wright and his wife Margaret recruited me, and at that time I was Neil asked me, he said, we would like for you to head up our jazz ensemble. They had a group of students, FAMU Alpha Stage Band, putting on some wonderful shows. But when he asked me that, I said, I'll do it on one condition, that we put it in the curriculum and give credit for it. Mm-hmm. And Neil did that, and that was the beginning of the jazz program in the curriculum at the university. And that has grown and grown and grown far beyond anything that I ever envisioned. And we have great jazz teachers there now, like jazz piano you can take, a great jazz saxophonist by the name of Don Alico, a great jazz trumpeter, Jamie Simmons. And by the way, one of the things that's coming up is called an Evening of Swing that I need to mention. This is a night, it's a big band dance and dinner, very elegant, and that's on November the 10th, and it will be at the Country Club, mm-hmm. Stones River Country Club. And if you're interested in that, call the music department. I don't have that number right now, but MTSU Music Department, they can connect you up with that. No, I originally came here to teach woodwinds. And the
oboes and stuff.
I had to teach every woodwind. They had a woodwind teacher before I came, but unfortunately he passed away, and I was left to teach every woodwind instrument, clarinet, saxophone, flute, oboe, and bassoon. And I don't know anybody that can really cover all of those really well, but I made an attempt and had some good results. But eventually we were able to hire a full-time flutist and oboist and saxophone teacher, and I went back to my main instrument, which was clarinet.
When the kids come in, are they totally green? Are they learning from the beginning?
Oh, no. They have to be performing at a high level to even be admitted to the school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they don't come in green.
I thought, man, what a job that would be.
No, it's kind of like recruiting good football players, you know.
All right.
Yeah. They're highly experienced and
they come in on scholarships.
Right.
For those particular
auditioning for scholarships. Right. They even have to audition to be in the School of Music now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the scholarships are very competitive all over the country.
So if someone's looking for a career in their particular type of music,
mm-hmm.
MTSU has become a magnet for those kids now. It is where they want to go to be at the top of their career.
Well, in those early days, the main focus was on music education,
mm-hmm.
preparing teachers. In fact, that was the name of the school at one time, Teachers College.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
But as time has gone on, it's broadened out so that anybody, particularly in this jazz area, that's an example of how the curriculum has broadened. And, of course, the recording industry management program, too, mm-hmm. was a great addition. And I was lucky to be involved in the beginning of that. Dr. Scarlett had the mm-hmm. vision that one day MTSU might have a recording industry major, and he assembled people from all over the country to come to the campus to give advice, and I was on that original ad hoc committee, and then later on I was on the three-man committee that established the curriculum in the recording industry management program. Mm-hmm. It was called RIM first, recording industry management, because it would have a music component and technology of recording and also management. Later on, they changed it to music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that program attracts students from all over the world, literally. Mm-hmm. I was telling you earlier about seeing a student the other night. He was doing some work at the flute recital.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to talk to him. And I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Sao Paulo, Brazil."
Wow.
He said, "I came here because of this recording industry program."
That's amazing it's known throughout the world.
It is. It's a wonderful program and a wonderful facility. They've also got fantastic facilities for television work, mm-hmm. for all kinds of things. I think people don't realize what MTSU has.
Music is one of those things that the kids really... You almost have a calling for it,
right.
just like you did. I mean, you started when you were in bands when you were 14 years old.
That's right.
And I think it's really a gift, isn't it? And if you've got that gift, you need somewhere to go to be able to broaden your talents.
Right, to develop.
And MTSU has become one of those places. That's
absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was always lucky being young. I was usually playing with... players that were older than I was, and that was a great education. And but MTSU has just grown amazingly in its offerings.
You were learning kind of OJT, weren't you? At age 14, you were playing with the best of the best at that time, and you were developing your talents to kind of, you were actually spreading out. You could see what they were doing, and then it was helping you to do other things.
Well, actually, when I was 14, I started playing at what we would call a honky-tonk,
mm-hmm.
called Club Forest, and I wasn't really playing with the best of the best at that time. But it was a band that...
that was interesting, 14 playing in a honky-tonk.
I was from 9 to 1. I was a freshman in school.
Oh, my.
And playing five nights a week.
Uh-huh.
And it made my algebra scores a little bit low, but it was a great experience. And played at a lot of the clubs in Nashville. And then, of course, we mentioned last week playing with all the teenage dance bands.
Mm-hmm.
There were several of those. And so there was a lot of work then. And I was eventually working my way through college by playing, performing, and doing odd jobs, too.
You know, people think that playing music is the greatest job in the world, and you go in and you play and then you leave and you're there for 3 or 4 hours and you get all the applause, which mm-hmm. is stimulating, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But how was it playing on the morning show and places like that, that would be real early in the morning and you would play and it's live and all of that. That had to have been tough. I mean, the morning show just lasted forever, but it had different formats as it went along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be very nerve-wracking. There was a television show that I played on for a while. It came on at 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't remember. It wasn't WSN. It was another station. Mm-hmm. And so we would meet there, and sometimes you would end up playing a solo on a song that you didn't even know. And mm-hmm. I mentioned last week about Nashville Shorthand. Mm-hmm. Somebody coming in with the guitar and said, "This is what I'm going to play today." And we would have to, like, take notes and then play. And then they said, "Okay, Johnny, you're going to play the second chorus on this as a solo, and you're on live television." You know that,
and no rehearsal.
No rehearsal. No, it's a little nerve-wracking, but it's one of the things you get used to.
We were talking a little bit. We hadn't mentioned this before, but one of the players I remember was John Gordy.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved to watch him. He's such an amiable type person.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people did not know that his son played football and was All-American at the University of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And went on to play pro. Just a mm-hmm. great, great player. But you had so many interesting people that you played with. Who was the one that would probably strike you have maybe more fonder memories of playing with that particular group than others?
Let's follow up on that John Gordy. Because I worked with John Gordy down at the Elks Club in Nashville in Bill Yandel's band.
Okay.
And John was a piano player, had huge hands. And his son went to school where I went to Cathedral School on West End Avenue. Mm-hmm. And each grade had its football team. So we had a football team, and I think it was about the eighth grade. And John went to school there, and he wanted to play with us. But we wouldn't let him play.
Now, wait a minute. How big was John at that time?
He wasn't really all that big at that time, but it's amazing. I've told that story to my grandson mm-hmm. about how he developed from sort of being a crybaby at that time up to being
listening, John?
sort of being All-American at UT and then I think All-Pro playing for the Lions.
Yeah,
I think
he was Lions. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he was. And he married a girl from Lewisburg that my wife Bobby and I knew down there. Beautiful girl.
All girls from Lewisburg are beautiful, aren't they?
Not bad.
Now, Who were some of the other really top band leaders that you really enjoyed playing with? I know you talked about Doc Severson.
Oh, yeah.
You really did like him.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Doc became famous being on the Johnny Carson mm-hmm. show, and then mm-hmm. he had a great band that traveled. I mean, mm-hmm. really great talent. Mm-hmm. Now, was he one of these that, like you said earlier, that would pick up talent as he would go?
I doubt that with him. Mm-hmm. I doubt that with him. I suspect. Well, in fact, I saw a telecast of his band. I mentioned last week that he's still working,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed that he seemed to have some of those original cast members of his band on the Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt if he would go into the pickup band type thing. You know?
Now, when his band travels, say if you're one of the musicians in his band, are you on a performance contract that when you go from place to place, you get paid for that particular gig, or are you on a? Is it possible to be on a salary
yes.
if you're playing?
Yes, it is, and sometimes that's the way it is. You mm-hmm. get paid whether you play or not mm-hmm. On some of those situations. But excuse me, I suspect that. With Doc's band, that it's probably on a performance basis because I don't think he does that much traveling, you know, to hire somebody full time. So it would say, we're going to go to New York and play, and you'll get paid X amount of dollars for mm-hmm. this trip and the show.
Now, if you're on a union member, if mm-hmm. you are a union member, which mm-hmm. almost all musicians are, what are the benefits that you get out of being in a union other than that you have an opportunity for more gigs and mm-hmm. more playtime?
Mm-hmm. Well, the union make sure that you get paid, for one thing. That's a big benefit. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when I joined the union in 1960, is that right? Yes. The union scale was $10 for 3 hours.
Wow. 1960. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's not bad.
And $12. No, I'm wrong. I joined in 1950.
Okay.
Yeah, 1950. And $12 for 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things. The other thing is we now, for example, you get residuals if you do a jingle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We recorded a commercial for Purina Dog Chow with Owen Bradley at the Ryman Auditorium. I guess this was early, must have been early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were paid $35. That commercial was used for 10 years.
Wow.
And every morning I would wake up and say, oh, there's that commercial. And that's all we got out of it. That was before the union had bargained for residuals,
mm-hmm.
so that you would get paid every 13 weeks, I think, that they would use the commercial, which is, I think, is right, that your mm-hmm. talent should be rewarded.
So if you play a number of jingles or ads, mm-hmm. you're doing pretty well, aren't
That's
you?
That's right. And at one time, I used to go to that mailbox and open up the mail, and there was another check, you know.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my son was in that business, too, and he can tell you about that. In fact, my granddaughter's in that business now in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, music is a great business, isn't it?
Well, there's a...
entertainment all the way across the board. You know, one of the saddest things I can remember, and you're just a little bit older than me, not much, but the Three Stooges were one of my favorite acts. I know they were silly and it was all dumb, but I could sit there and laugh at them. I love slapstick. But those guys were almost broke at the end of their time. And the reason being that they played all of those clips mm-hmm. year after year, mm-hmm. I mean, for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't drawing a dime off of it. I always thought that was one of the worst things I could remember.
Yeah, that is a shame. Yeah, there's a real...
But would the union have not been protecting them at the time, or was it even in existence?
Well, the union, I don't know. That's under, I forget what the name of that union is, about performance on television and mm-hmm. actors, Screen Actors Guild is one.
Yeah.
I don't know when that came in, but that's a good example of what could happen. There's a real misunderstanding, too, when the public hears about musicians making a lot of money, say, off of a jingle or mm-hmm. or whatever, but they don't realize that that's not a steady income. It's not like having a steady job. It might mm-hmm. end, you know. So the music business for performers is really up and down. You can really be up and you can really be down. And a lot of the musicians end up just like a lot of the pro football players, broke and sort of on a subsistence thing.
The music industry is a tough business.
I mean,
when mm-hmm. you first start at 14, you know, you love entertaining people. You mm-hmm. love the mm-hmm. the enjoyment they get from mm-hmm. what you do and the level that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
But you travel a lot. Mm-hmm. You're constantly, you really are not able to put your roots down. I mean, you're mm-hmm. constantly changing from here to mm-hmm. there and different mm-hmm. people that you're having to work with.
Yeah.
You have to be really motivated to be in that business.
Well, a lot of the bands we were talking about earlier did a lot of traveling, and musicians went with them, and that's a very hard life. I never really cared for that. I did that one summer with the Jerry Mayburn Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was 19 then, and we played, I met them up in Bristol, Tennessee, and we played some one-nighters, and then we played at Savannah Beach, Tybee Island for 7 weeks, and then up to Myrtle Beach at the mm-hmm. Pavilion for 7 weeks, and some one-nighters. But I never cared for that traveling, and with those bands that I played with came to Nashville. So mm-hmm. the work that I did, the work just kind of came to me in Nashville without having to travel a lot. So I was very lucky.
You know, at one time it seems like they graduated from radio mm-hmm. to television. I hate to put it in that mm-hmm. text, but they did. And it seemed like that once you became known through the television industry, that the money started flowing in. I remember Arthur Godfrey used to bring a lot of talent in. Of course, Ed Sullivan brought talent in, and it just went on and on and on. And once you became established visually, it started making a difference. And I always wondered why there was more money thrown into the TV industry than it was in the radio. What was the difference there? Because radio was king, but there really wasn't a lot of money flowing there, I don't think, except through the selling of records and things like that.
Well, one explanation for that I would have is that our dominant sense is visual. We learn most of what we learn visually. And so I think people pay a lot of attention to what they see. And Aristotle said a long time ago, the worst musician wiggles the most. And so you can apply that to some of the...
Aristotle said that?
Yeah. You can apply that to some of the current things of people. People like to see movement, and they like to see visual things. And the oral skills are second place.
But, you know, sounds are lasting for me more than the visual things. They stay with me longer. I've got my mom died a few years ago, and during those few months before she died, she had called me and left me a message on the phone.
Oh, wow.
And I have still got that message.
Yeah.
And it's just like she's still here when I play that message back.
Yeah.
And music is like that. Music always brings back memories.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've said this on my show before, you cannot have a good movie unless you have good music with that movie that goes along with the action or whatever's going on at the time.
Right.
It just you just cut the sound off and watch some of the greatest movies ever made, and they're nothing.
Right.
Without the sound of the music, it really isn't. It takes care of everything.
Right. And you come away from those great movies singing a song.
Yeah, you do.
From the movie. You remember that melody.
Yeah.
I worked for a time when I was, even before I was 14, as an usher at the Belmont Theater in Nashville. So we got to see those great movies over and over and over, and I can remember walking home many nights singing the songs from those great movies. And they're still with us. We need to preserve all those great tunes from those times.
Oh, I agree. And that's one thing that Turner Classic Movies and all those people are doing, is they are preserving the films and the music that goes along with those films. And, and of course, the same thing needs to be done. I don't know how long all these great songs from the 30s and the 40s and 50s are going to be able to last, but I presume that there is a form of preservation that's going on to help. Because there's a shop in Eagleville right now that you can go into, and they can play all those 33s and 45s over there. Yeah, I was in there a couple of years ago, and Teresa Brewer, who was one of my, I mean, she was a real upbeat singer. I mean, I loved to hear her sing. And I told him, I'd love to hear a Teresa Brewer song. He pulled it right up.
You're kidding.
No, put it on the phonograph, and it was just like I was back 60 years. I mean, it was, or 50 years.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to make a trip over there. I've got a nephew that lives in Eagleville, and I'm glad you told me about that.
Well, I'll guarantee you he knows where it is. Of course, it's right down on the town square. And we're going to take a quick break and let you know that the last part of John's show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care provides top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, 713-4639, and online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639.
It could be any moment the deer of a lifetime walks by, and you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors.
All right, now you hit that one, my boy.
We got camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells, boots, pretty much anything. We got it. If we don't have it, we'll get it.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street, just down from the old International Paper location.
This is Dr. Kelly Buckles. Lifestyle, diet, and stress can cause chronic inflammation in your body, which can present as pain, fatigue, illness, or injuries. Let us help you treat this naturally.
Visit Laser Therapy and Chiropractic Center online at MurfreesboroChiropractor.com.
We are excited to welcome a fellow alumni and colleague of mine, Dr. Thea Carner. Call 217-8624 today. Same day appointments available.
Laser Therapy and Chiropractic Center at 524 North University Street.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. And our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the DoubleTree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, Jose, Tex-Mex cuisine.
Hola, amigos. This is Sergio from Okay, Jose. I'm the manager. Come join us. Come try us out. We would like to earn your business. We make everything fresh from scratch. Go and join us for a good quality meal.
Here are today's specials at Okay, Jose. Bring your kids in. It's Kids Meal Thursday for $1.99.
Stop by Okay, Jose on South Rutherford next to Walmart. That's the Thursday Kids Meal Special, $1.99, dine-in only. And tonight is karaoke night from 8 to 11.
We're talking with Dr. Rishi Saxena, this area's only certified physician in heart CT, about the 64-slice CT scan.
Before you go for heart catheterization because of chest pain or minor abnormality in stress test, you need to consider this non-invasive device to find out about the blockage. Or if you just have risk factor, you're not having any chest pain, you want to find out plague early so you could act on it.
No needles, no pain, it only takes minutes. Call 896-4800. Dr. Rishi Saxena.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with John Duke. You were telling me off the air, and this is one of the great things about being with entertainers, is they're really real when you get them away from everything. But people like, you tell me about Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton's the same where she's on the air or off the air.
Exactly. Yeah, I got to know Dolly. That was a good thing about the Johnny Cash television show. We had all these stars, and they'd be hanging out backstage, and Dolly was just fantastic. And as you say, she was no different talking to you one-on-one than she is when she's on camera. She doesn't change. She's the same. And she was wonderful.
Those are the people that you really remember well. You know, some are going to put on airs, they become more popular and famous and stuff like that. And then you have the Dolly Partons of the world that they don't want to change. They want to go back to their roots. They want to be like they were, but still enjoy the entertainment process.
Right. Yeah. Well, she's a miracle.
Now, have we talked about all your things that are going on yet?
I think you've pretty well rung me out.
Oh, did I? I wanted to make sure. Now, I know that some of the family members are listening in all parts of the country and all parts of the world. Is there anything at all that you want to relate to them while you're here? Because I know you have a lot of radio contact, but how is it having your kids spread out like that? I mean, I know in some respects you have a lot of pride in them. But
yeah, well,
you kind of miss them, don't you?
Pat is the one that's really not around. John is in Nashville, and Renee is here in Murfreesboro, about one block from me. And Pat's out in California. One thing that I might mention, I had a brother that I mentioned to you was in World War II, mm-hmm. and he played the piano, could play anything he wanted. He never had a lesson. He could play anything he wanted to play by ear. And when I was growing up, he had about every recording that Benny Goodman had ever made.
Wow.
And as trying to learn to play the clarinet, I had all those Benny Goodman records to copy. And that was one of the ways you learn. You'd learn by copying. You'd listen and then try to play. And he was just so great growing up with him. And I had great support of my sister, who used to take me to concerts like Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, Erskine Hawkins, the 20th Century Gabriel. There was a lot going on. Stan Kenton. I had a great family to grow up in. Everybody was musical. Everybody played and sang, and either music or art. That was the two things in my family.
That's a blessing. I mean, it's a gift. I have one uncle, I guess, in our family that could pick up any instrument, and he could listen and play it. Couldn't read music, mm-hmm. but he could play it perfectly. Mm-hmm. How in the world is that possible? I mean, some people just have to work for years to be able to get to that type of level. Mm-hmm. And somebody like you, you can listen to the sound. How do you put that instrument to the sound? Because they're all so different.
Well, gosh, this gets into a whole area that I did my PhD dissertation on.
All right.
And that's methods of teaching improvisation. How do you learn to do that? And you have to become very familiar with your instrument. And a lot has to do with how you begin to learn music.
Mm-hmm.
If you begin to learn music strictly by reading, it's sort of difficult later on to develop the ability to play. It's not impossible, and that's what a lot of schools do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the great players just learn to do it without reading,
mm-hmm.
And develop that ear so that you can play what you hear. That's one of the things you've got to teach yourself to do. If you can hear it, you can play it. So there are a lot of little exercises that you can do to teach people to pay attention and learn to play what they hear.
It's almost like when you're trying to learn a different language.
Exactly.
If you read it in the classroom,
that's right.
You still are not able to converse correctly on the street.
Exactly. It's exactly the same thing. And I've been involved with a program at the university that Dr. Shelley Thomas teaches,
mm-hmm.
and it's called TPR. This is a new way of teaching foreign languages where you get around this problem of starting with diagramming and doing all the grammar and, mm-hmm. and reading it, and you start learning it like you did as a child, like you learned English as a child.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of imitation, a lot of listening. A lot of listening. That's one of the most important things in music, is to listen a lot. Jackie Pearson is a real good friend of mine and has become probably the best guitar player in Nashville. I asked him one day, how much do you listen to jazz? And he said, all day long.
Wow.
I mean, it's not just a it's not just a matter of an hour or so here, but just really dedicated listening.
Some people are born with 4-2 speed, become great athletes, mm-hmm. and some mm-hmm. people want to get out there and try so hard, but mm-hmm. it's very difficult if you don't mm-hmm. really have that talent. It really is.
Talent is an important component.
Yeah. And, I got to have you back on, John. We've run out of time again.
I'd love it. I've enjoyed it very much.
You give me a call when you're ready, and we'll go whichever direction you want to go, because you're a lot of fun.
Well, thanks,
really
Truman. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh,
I'm honored that you would have me go through my history.
Oh, you're special. Believe me. That's an important part of our history, and we want to be able to preserve it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And we'll see you guys in the morning, and we will have Mr. Ken Beck, one of our good journalists here in this community, and we've got a lot to talk about. See you tomorrow.